good service with a wink and a nod. You meet a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Bob in your life.
Yeah, turn up the volume, here's Bob in your life.
Bob in your life. Bob in your life.
Go, Bob.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, heterosexual, anti-choice talk show host. Now, a reporter from the Wall Street Journal has been in Denver at the abortion mill for the last 2 days. We hope to get an update from someone in the field later in the show. But a Wall Street Journal reporter for 2 days interviewing the Christian pro-lifers there. And today, we want to get this report later in the show, but today a baby was saved and the Wall Street Journal reporter witnessed it. The saving of a child from being torn to pieces by Planned Parenthood. I wonder if that'll make it into the story. We'll see. But then also we're waiting for Israel's retaliation against the terrorists. We're waiting for that. And I have here the text of Ariel Sharon's statement at a news conference last night after the terrorist attack in Israel, where 16 were killed, dozens injured. And what a great statement. Now, Ariel Sharon is not a Christian. He's not a Christian. But non-Christians have the right to defend their children from murderers. And he says in his statement, you know, he really nails Arafat. And in so doing, he subtly rebukes George Bush's position of negotiating with a terrorist. But also he says, those who rise up to kill us, we will preempt and kill him first. He says, he who rises up to kill us, we will preempt and kill him first. That's the strategy. That's how you beat terrorism. And that's good. You don't succeed every time, but if you succeed enough, you'll win. All right, but before we do any of that, I want to tell you about the caller who called in last night, Gerald from Hawaii. He called in and we talked for a while on the show. And then after the program, he stayed on hold. And I thought he would have hung up. He stayed on hold, and we talked afterward. And I want to tell you about two things that Gerald said to me after the show. And the two errors, with the first thing, he fell into the tortoise error. What is the tortoise error? And with the second, he showed, I think, fear and a bit of irrationality. Now, I'll explain, and you evaluate. Now, this is the tortoise error. First, let me tell you what he said. He said that to try to explain the problem of the complexity of life, of how complex living cells are, and he doesn't believe that God specially created life. He doesn't believe that. He's not an atheist, but he thinks life just arose naturally. So in order to explain how such complex things as DNA molecules and living cells can just come into existence, this is his explanation. He said, well, I believe that atoms have intelligence and that molecules are smart. And he says, you know, those things are really small and it's hard for us to see inside them. And I think they have intelligence. So with that, Gerald committed the tortoise error. Now, what's the tortoise error? Well, think back to when the pagan Greeks, you know, the pagan Greeks, they stalled scientific progress for almost 2,000 years. It took Christians to come along who had a reverence for the Bible to get science back on track once the pagan Greeks derailed it. I'll give you two examples of how Aristotle derailed science and today, unbelievers blame the Christians for science being derailed when it was really the pagan Greeks. All right, two examples. One, Aristotle taught, like Ptolemy did, that the sun revolved around the earth And he reasoned that the earth could not be moving because if you pick up a rock and drop it, it falls straight down. And since it doesn't fall at an angle, then obviously the earth must be standing still. And that pagan's ignorance was corrected centuries later by a Christian named Isaac Newton, who explained that because the rock was moving at the same speed of the earth, it would continue moving at approximately that speed while it was falling. So it would look like it's falling down in a straight line. All right. And then the pagan Aristotle, and this is where we get to the tortoise error. He also said that the earth could not be a heavenly body like the moon or the planets because it was too heavy to float through space. Once again, he picked up a rock. Too many rocks, that guy. He picked up a rock and dropped it and said, see, it's heavy, so it falls down. And all the earth is much heavier than a single rock, so it couldn't possibly float through space. It must be resting. Okay, resting on what? Well, he had no answer for that. But pagan Greeks, they didn't know the Bible, which says that God hung the earth upon nothing. That's a good description of the solar system, isn't it? In the Bible's oldest book of Job, chapter 26, verse 7, Job said that God stretched out the north over empty space and that he hung the earth on nothing. Isn't that a fascinating scientific insight? So the pagans, they didn't have the benefit of the Bible. So the Greeks thought that the earth was resting on something, either on the shoulder of Atlas, maybe, he better not shrug, or on the back of a tortoise. But a philosophy student could have asked Socrates, hey, teacher, but what is the tortoise standing on? To which Socrates could have answered, don't worry yourself about that, son. It's turtles all the way down. Okay, so the turtle is on the back of a turtle, is on the back of a turtle. That's the tortoise error. When you don't solve a problem, you just remove it a generation. You know, the Roman Catholics have this problem, don't they, with Mary? They say Mary gave birth to a sinless child, Jesus, and so Mary must have been sinless. Otherwise, how could she have done that? So Mary, they invented something called the Immaculate Conception, where Mary was conceived without sin so that she could give birth to a sinless child. But they haven't solved the problem. They only pushed it back a generation because then Mary's mother would have had to have been sinless for her to give birth to Mary, a sinless child, and her mother, and so on, all the way back through Sarah and Noah's wife and to Eve. So, alas, for the Catholics, it's turtles all the way down. That's the tortoise error. So now, Gerald's problem, he's trying to explain the complexity of life without God specially creating that complexity. So he concocts that atoms and molecules have intelligence. He's fallen into the tortoise pit. He's just removed the problem a generation, because then how smart would the atoms be? Hey, this is Bob Enyart here. We're doing a live commercial break inside the show. And I want to tell you, yesterday I told you about a video we had, Mount St. Helens. And people can order that video from us for $24.95. And it shows how canyons can form not in a million years, but in a day. Huge canyons. And it shows so much about how coal formed, for example, and why we have petrified trees in Yellowstone that are standing vertically in all different strata, 10 different strata, and they have no root systems. Why don't petrified trees have roots? Very interesting. But the roots are all broken off within a foot or so of the trunk of the tree. Why is that? Well, Christians know. Creationists know. Evolutionists don't know, because their worldview is wrong, and so to them, so many things are complete mysteries. So if you'd like to find out more about science and the evidence that's in the world of when was the earth created? How old is the earth? Call us up at 1-888-8-NYART. That's 1-888-836-9278. And order this video, Mount St. Helens. It's just a blast to watch this video. Fabulous footage. Aerial footage, submarine footage beneath the Spirit Lake there at Mount St. Helens. You see these thousands upon thousands of floating logs, and then they get waterlogged, and they start to float vertically, and they begin to sink into the floor of Spirit Lake. What does all that tell us about the surface of the earth? A lot. So call us, 1-888-8-NYART.
6-9278.
Now that's what we get when we interrupt a planned commercial break with a live commercial break. We get to reemphasize the phone number. Okay. So anyway, that's the tortoise error. And if Gerald believes that atoms are smart enough that they can design the wildly complex living cells that make up all of life, what's more complicated, a 747 jet or a living cell? Which is more complex? The living cell is vastly more complicated. A living cell has been described by microbiologists like a small city with all the different departments that a city has to function. And it's just wildly complicated with millions of pieces, complex pieces. So if Gerald believes, he sees that and he says, well, that's complicated and that couldn't just happen by accident. And he doesn't want to believe that God created life specially. So he posits that atoms are smart enough so that they can build mitochondria and cell walls and protein and the billions of base pairs of DNA amino acids you need, the rungs on the double helix of life. He thinks atoms are smart enough to do all that. So he's committed the tortoise error. He's just pushed the problem one generation further away. What's more complex, a machine or the designer of the machine? Which is more complex, a machine, like an engine in a car, or the people that designed the machine? There's no comparison. When you have a designer and he makes something, the designer, logically, has to be far more complex than the thing he designed. And so the atoms have to have this awesome, brilliant intelligence far beyond human beings because we can't design a living cell. We can't do it. Try to get some dirt and make a living cell. We can't do it. So imagine how brilliant the atoms have to be. So we say, Gerald, how did the atoms get that smart? Will they go to some kind of an atomic university? Take cell building 101? How'd they get that smart? So Gerald's solution is no solution. He's fallen into the tortoise pit. Okay. But I said he made two errors. He made the tortoise error. And with the second, I think he showed fear and a bit of irrationality. And it was about this. I said to Gerald from Hawaii that there are only three possibilities for the origin of the physical universe. Only three. Either it was always here, or it created itself out of nothing, or something outside the physical universe created it. That's it. Either the stuff of the universe was always here, or the stuff of the universe brought itself out of nothing, or an external entity created the universe in that it originated from something outside of itself. Those are the only three theoretical possibilities. And Gerald would not admit that. He said, oh, there must be other possibilities. I said, okay, well, what are they, Gerald? What are the other possibilities? Oh, there must be. You know, he reminded me of a Jewish woman in Israel named Joni. Joni was our tour guide this past trip, and she's not a Christian. And she's a Jew in Israel. She doesn't believe in Christ. But she thought to be a good tour guide, she had to pretend to agree with Jesus on things and to almost like praise him. Even though she didn't believe in him, she thought we would have a better time if she pretended to believe or to agree with Jesus. So allow me to illustrate Gerald's fear by describing Joni's to you. Right, Gerald is afraid of the fact that there's only three options. Either the universe was always here, or it created itself out of nothing, or something outside of it brought it into existence. He's afraid of just being limited to those three possibilities, even though he couldn't possibly conceive of another. And so I want to illustrate his fear by describing Joni's fear to you. Where were we? You know, somebody in our studio audience was there in Israel with us. We were in Kafar Nahum, the city of Nahum, Capernaum, on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. And we were standing in an ancient synagogue, which was built on the actual foundation of the synagogue in which Christ stood. And Jesus always went from town to town, and he'd go into the synagogues and teach. And in John chapter 6, we have recorded what Jesus said while he was in the synagogue in Capernaum. Well, our tour guide, Joni, she didn't believe in Jesus. Well, for that matter, she didn't believe in Adam or Noah or Moses either. But at any rate, she was standing in approximately the same place that Jesus would have been standing in front of our group and other tourists, with drama and fanfare. She quoted Jesus saying, she's quoting Jesus in the synagogue, and she says, "I am the bread of life." And Jesus said, "Whoever eats this bread will never die. I am the living bread. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever." And being our tour leader at that point, I interrupted and asked in a loud voice, "Wasn't he a lunatic?" Joni was absolutely stunned. Huh? It was as if her eyes were going in and out of focus. She didn't understand why I would have said that or how to respond. Huh? Joni, if Jesus said he was the bread of life and that whoever ate that bread would never die, that he came down from heaven to give us eternal life, he must have been a lunatic, right? Either a lunatic or a liar or the Lord, the Savior. Those are your only three options. He could have been one of only those three options. He's either a lunatic because he really believed all that stuff, or he was a liar because he knew it was bogus, but he was out to scam people, or he was the Lord, the true Lord from heaven. And Joni said, I'll remember this for the rest of my life. Joni said, "I think there must be other possibilities." Oh, that was just classic. To which I responded, "What, Joni? There are no other options. You must decide, Joni, for yourself, whether you will judge Jesus as a lunatic, a liar, or the Lord of your life." "No, there must be another option." "No, Gerald, there's no other option. Either the universe was always here, or it made itself out of nothing, or some external entity created it. Those are your only three options." I think both Gerald and Joni had the intelligence to understand their options. I think they could understand. But fear of learning the truth, their pride, their selfishness, worked to cloud their minds so that they are willfully ignorant, not stupid. Well, I don't know. I mean, not especially stupid, but ignorant, willfully ignorant, the kind of willful ignorance that a judge refuses to accept as a defense, wherein ignorance of the law is no excuse, right? Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Well, that's what lawyers say and prosecutors. And of course, that's only valid when the law makes sense and when it's intuitive, as is God's law. But they're willfully ignorant. All right. Now, I think I'm going to go to the phones, and then I want to go through Ariel Sharon's statement at a news conference last night, the Prime Minister of Israel. But our number, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. All right, now let's go to Denver. And Jason, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob.
Jason, this is our live report from about what happened at Planned Parenthood the last 2 days with the Wall Street Journal reporter. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, he isn't a social reporter. He deals with privacy issues. So he's not used to the abortion debate to begin with. Mm. So his first shock is seeing Ken and Joe's van with the pictures of the aborted babies on the side.
Joe Scott, who was on this show 2 weeks ago on a Friday night, and we had one call follow-up from Texas. Some guy said, I heard that, and my friend and I the next day went all over town looking for abortion mills to begin protesting.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Joe Scott, she's a hero, and so is her husband, Ken. So anyway, he saw the pictures of the dead babies, this Wall Street Journal reporter, on Ken and Joe's van.
Exactly. And Joe, when she has an opportunity to talk to the girls going into the abortion clinic, she has a book going through pictorially how the baby develops, what an abortion actually looks like,
right,
as well as where they can get help. And so
where
she had
women...
the opportunity to go through that book with the reporter as well.
Wow.
And so it's a very powerful presentation that Joe does, and she's wonderful at it because she's been doing it for 20-some-odd years.
Right.
So we had a great opportunity to talk to him about abortion, why we do what we do, and this afternoon we were talking to him after we left the abortion clinic, and we asked him what his thoughts were about us, and he said, well, I thought you guys are going to be a lot more crazy than what you are. Because when you hear the press reports and we're a bunch of lunatics bomb
right.
clinics and shoot abortion doctors,
right,
you
right.
think we're absolutely insane.
Right.
But when you're out there and you actually see the passion and the hurt when a woman goes in to kill her baby and how torn up it is to make the pro-lifers and how wonderful it is to see a baby saved, which we actually had today. So it's so emotional out there.
So there was a baby who was saved today at Planned Parenthood in Denver, scheduled to be ripped apart by a suction aspirator.
Exactly.
And that baby was saved. How did that happen?
Well, there were a few Hispanic girls in a car that drove up to the abortion clinic, and Joe had the opportunity to talk to them before they drove into the parking lot. Once they get into the parking lot, it's very hard to talk to them. So our best opportunity to save the baby's life is before they drive into the Planned Parenthood's parking lot.
Mm.
So we pulled them aside on the side of the road and talked to them for probably about 20 minutes. And during this time, a lot of times the escorts who work for Planned Parenthood as volunteers try to say, you can come in, you don't have to listen to these people.
Right.
They're trying not to let the baby get away.
Right.
They don't want to let the woman have a choice and hear the other side of the argument.
Yeah, they want to make their $450 too.
Exactly.
Right.
So we had the opportunity to talk to them, and one of the girls in the car was going in for an abortion that day, and another one was 6 months pregnant. Now, she was going to keep her baby, but she had no prenatal care.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, Jason.
Okay, so we took them about 6 blocks to a crisis pregnancy center.
Praise the Lord.
And we got help for both of them.
All right.
So it's not only the babies that are scheduled to die that we care about. We also care about,
of course, the mothers.
All the mothers and all
Jason, thank you so very much. Wow, what a great story. And the Wall Street Journal saw it. Hey, this is Bob Benyar, pastor of Denver Bible Church. Denver, we'll see you at church Sunday. Live commercial break. Once again, after the show, I plan on staying in the studio for about 10 minutes because for those who listen on the internet, we feel a bit closer to you guys than we do to those who listen over the air, because it's a more intimate group. And more of our supporters and friends are ones who listen over the web, because it takes a bit more effort than just flipping through your radio dial. And it takes a lot to keep Bob and Yurt Live going. In fact, I'm not going to say this over the airwaves, but just this week we are working through a new agreement with Information Radio Network on staying on the air and growing to more cities. Right now the program is airing in 5 cities. And to do this takes a lot of money. It just, every city you see, there's hundreds or thousands of dollars in expense to maintain affiliates. And it's you guys on the internet who listen that really provide the bulk of our support. So I want to thank you for that. But I also want to encourage you, I'm going to stay after the show for 10 minutes. And I hope in those 10 minutes I could talk to 2 people who want to order some of our materials. And what I mostly am hoping for is people who call in who say, Bob, I want to sign up for the monthly Bible study tapes, which is $24.95 a month. And you give us a credit card number if you have one, and then we charge it automatically each month around the 5th of the month, and then we mail out your tapes, 4 Bible study tapes every month, or to sign up for the sermons, the 4 sermons each month, or to sign up for the Best of Bob audio tapes, where rather than trying to record off the web, we mail out the 8 best shows of the month every month. We mail 4 in the middle of the month and 4 at the end of the month. And so if anybody could sign up for those services, that's just a tremendous way to support Bob and Yurt Live and to get the word out. If you listen on the web, but you can't get your friend or your brother or someone else to listen to it on the web, you can order Best of Bob and have the tapes go right to that person or come to you and you give them out selectively. Because in a month, we do 21 shows in a month, well, 21.6. And out of those, 8 hopefully are pretty good. Otherwise, we should throw in the towel. So call us, 1-888-8-NYART. Order something, and let's keep the fight up. All right, somebody called in during the break and wanted a quote from USA Today that Luke the mail bomber, Luke Helder, that his dad said, Luke is not a dangerous man. So, yeah, he's only a terrorist. He only put 18 pipe bombs in people's mailboxes, injured 6 people, and we're thankful that none of them were seriously injured. But the police stopped him with 5 more pipe bombs in his car, and he threw a gun out the window. There's nothing wrong with having a gun in your car, but when you're planting pipe bombs, you're a criminal. And those are the only people that we should take guns away from are criminals. All right. We conservative Christians, we believe in gun control, which is a keen eye and a steady hand. That's gun control. 2 hands, if at all possible. But sometimes, you know, you might have two revolvers, one in each hand, if the bad guys are really coming at you. Our 4-year-old, he knows, somebody asked him, should you ever point a gun at anyone? And he said, no, never, except a real bad guy. That was pretty good. That's a 4-year-old. Okay. I want to go through Israel's prime minister's statement. Not the whole thing, but a few excerpts. And our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9797. 9278, because we're waiting for Israel's retaliation against the terrorists. And here we have, last night, he said, those who call for millions of martyrs are guilty. Now, those who call for millions of martyrs, who called for millions of martyrs to march on Jerusalem? Who was that who did that in Arabic on television in the Middle East? Some guy with a dish towel on his head. Who was it? Arafat. Yasser Arafat. That's who did it. You know, was it MSNBC or Fox? Who had the exclusive interview with Arafat a couple days ago? And they were showing him Israel's 105-page book documenting that Arafat is a terrorist. And so are the Saudi Arabian, so is the Saudi Arabian government. And he said it was all lies, and he threw the book to the ground. He was a bit out of control. But they should have, and they were saying, well, your signature's right here on this document that's giving sizable amounts of money to known terrorists. And his response to that was, he didn't say it's not my signature. He said, it's my job to take care of all my people. Well, I have to take care of all my people. Okay. So you have known terrorists and you give them large quantities of money. So anyway, Sharon said, those who call for millions of martyrs are guilty. Those who fund terrorism are guilty. Those who launch terrorism are guilty. Guilty, he repeated. That's excellent. And I wish George Bush could follow the Bush Doctrine. Wouldn't that be great if Bush would follow the Bush Doctrine? Maybe he doesn't follow it because he doesn't like the source. I don't know. You'd think if anyone in the world would want to follow the Bush Doctrine, it would be Bush. But he had to clarify the Bush Doctrine. That he originally said that if you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. And now, really, now that we have all this overwhelming evidence against Yasser Arafat, now the new Bush Doctrine could be, if you are a terrorist, you are a terrorist. That's a good doctrine, don't you think? If you are a terrorist, you are a terrorist. That's too complex, right? For America's foreign policy. The State Department couldn't handle that. I don't think, what's that guy with the disease, colon polyp, secretary of, what was he? I don't think he could handle that. I don't think he could comprehend, if you are a terrorist, you are a terrorist. He certainly couldn't handle, if you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist. So Yasser Arafat, terrorists are us. Anyway, Ariel Sharon went on to say, to anyone who tries to blackmail Israel through the weapon of terror, I say today, Israel will not surrender to blackmail. He who rises up to kill us, we will preempt and kill him first. Oh, that's so excellent. The mindless liberals in America say, they repeat this cliche endlessly, there is no violent solution to terrorism. There is no military solution to terrorism. There is no military solution to the problem in the Middle East. Well, there is only a military solution to terrorism. There is no other solution to terrorism. There is none. God does not have a different solution to terrorism than a military one. Because eventually Jesus will come back. Right? Is that agreed by the Christians tuning in? Even the limp-wristed Christians, they agree Jesus will come back. And they're, no, I don't got to pay any money for that. I don't got to pay a dollar for saying that. No, I just mean wimpy. Come on. This is an H-free zone this month, the whole month of May. No one could use the H word on this show, and especially me. And if I do, I have to pay the show engineer a dollar each time. And I paid him $3 so far this month. $3. Limp-wristed is safe. It's not 50 cents. Look, it's either a buck or nothing. None of this compromise garbage. Black or white. Okay, so anyway, if the Christians who are out there, even the nicer than God Christians, I hope they agree that someday Jesus is coming back and that after he returns, there will be peace on the earth. But how is it that Jesus is going to bring peace? Is he going to bring with him a baby in a manger? Is that what he's going to bring and all the world will look at the baby in the manger and peace has come to earth and goodwill toward men? Is that how the peace, will he bring a light and put the light over all the world and all, like Yasser Arafat will say, hey man, look at the light. No, that's not going to happen. How is it that there will be peace on earth after Jesus returns? How is it? What is he bringing with him that's going to enable peace? Does anybody in the studio audience know? What does he bring with him? All right. Somebody just ran up the stairs. What in the where? And it's down. Whoa! What a sword. What is that, a 2.5 foot in the sheath? Take it out of the sheath. Oh, man, that looks sharp. It's got the hilt there to keep your hand from getting cut by your opponent. Now, is that a two-edged sword? Jesus is going to bring a sword with which he will kill and destroy the wicked. That's God's plan for dealing with terrorism. That's God's plan. God is smart. God is smart. Liberals are stupid. God is smart. Liberals are stupid. Atheists don't have the solution to the world's problems. They are part of the problem. Evolutionists do not have the solution to the world's problems. They are part of the problem. Democrats don't have the solution to the world's problem. They are part of the problem. Socialists and communists. The Libertarian Party, they do not have the solution to the world's problems. They are part of the problem. Hillary, Hollywood, huh? All those H words, like humanists, they are part of the problem. Got to watch out with those H words. They're part of the problem. Christians have the solution. Those who read the Bible have the solution. Now, the Jews, they've rejected Jesus Christ utterly. Like America has rejected God utterly. We have outlawed God in our courts, in our schools, increasingly in public life. We mock God. We mock him. In our culture, our economy. It's just despicable what happens. So both America and Israel have turned against God, and we're two of the most wicked nations on earth. But because America was built on some biblical principles, not all, we owned blacks as slaves, and we put it into Article 1 of the Constitution, that blacks are three-fifths of a person. You know, so many Christians hear that, and they get mad. They said, Bob, the Constitution doesn't say that. It says three-fifths of a person. Stop whining. But anyway, we're not perfect, but we can defend our kids.
Can a Christian lie?
Interrupt that commercial break to bring you this commercial break. All right? Now, I told you in the first break about the Mount St. Helens video. Now, we resell that from the Institute for Creation Research. We have about, how many products do we offer? Not counting individual tapes, but albums, audio albums and videos. In literature, we offer about 40, 50 products. All right. Well, just a few products are third party. And Mount St. Helens is one of those because of how great it is. That you can look at this volcano that blew up and learn so much about the past. You can see how major features of the Earth's surface were formed rapidly, not over millions of years. So you can get that from us. Call 1-888-836-9393. 800-836-9278, 836-9278, order Mount St. Helens. It's $24.95. Most of our videos are $19.95, some of them are $24.95, like that one. Well, we have another video that's a third-party video called Sex Has a Price Tag by Pam Stenzel. You want to talk about, anybody in the studio audience see that video? Yes, yes, good, bad, average? I'm getting all thumbs up. It's fabulous. If you know a teenager and you're concerned about that teenager destroying his life through sexual immorality, you know a teenager who's a really good kid and you want to help increase his chances of having a good life, get Sex Has a Price Tag and let him watch it. They'll be glued to the TV for an hour. It's great. So get it. We're back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YART, 1-800-836-9278. So I wanted to continue with Israel's statement at the news conference last night in New York. Well, he was in New York, right? Well, he left from Washington to New York to fly out on El Al, I imagine. That's the way to fly to Israel. It's certainly the securest airline in the world. Isn't it funny, even though they have the most enemies, what did the UN vote? 74 against Israel, condemning Israel for defending themselves against terror? And was it 4 or 14 voted for Israel? And a bunch abstained. Anyway, at least some abstained. At least that. Well, so Sharon said, he who rises up to kill us, we will preempt and kill him first. That's the book of Revelation. That's what God gives the authority to the two witnesses, to whoever tries to kill them, that they would kill them first. It's in the Bible. It's in the New Testament. Now, I know a lot of weak-kneed liberals. Do I owe money for that? A lot of weak-kneed Christians think that in the Old Testament, God was mean, but then he got his act together in the New Testament. He was mean in the Old and good in the New. But it's in the New Testament where God killed people for lying about how much money they gave to church. That's in the New Testament. It's in the New Testament God sent worms to eat up somebody's guts and killed King Herod. That's in the New Testament. It's in the New Testament where God slaughters the largest number of people described anywhere in the Bible, in the New Testament. And it's in the New Testament where God says the governing authorities have, from God, they have the obligation against criminals to bring terror, wrath, and vengeance, and to execute them with the sword. The New Testament, the book of Romans, says that the governing authority should bring vengeance against the criminal. Like when we went after the Taliban, and we came on them like a ton of bricks. That was vengeance. That was good. Like when Israel's IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, comes onto the terrorist infrastructure like a ton of bricks and destroys them. I remember one of the battles, where were they? In Nablus? And the Jews were going in to dismantle the terrorist infrastructure. And in one building, in one house, there were about 6 gunmen shooting out at the Israeli soldiers in the street behind tanks. So the one Israeli soldier picked up a radio and said, and called in a helicopter, and one missile into the house blew the house up, killed the six gunmen. Now, that's what God has authorized governing authorities to do, to bring vengeance, wrath, and terror against the criminals, and to execute them with the sword. That's New Testament theology. You think God changed from the Old to New Testament? No, of course not. Wait, you think in the New Testament he became a United Methodist? I don't think so. I don't think so. So anyway, let's go back to Sharon at the point in the statement where he says, if they rise up to kill us, we will kill them first. As we have proven, there is no and there will never be any shelter for terrorists, their abettors or dispatchers, and all those who are engaged in terrorism. What public school teacher in America could write such an interesting sentence? That's excellent. There will never be shelter for terrorists, for their abettors or dispatchers, and all those who are engaged in terrorism. There is no, and there never will be, any shelter for evil. Israel will act the same as any democracy that protects itself. I would have preferred he said that any country that defends itself. Israel will act like any other democracy which fights the forces of darkness. Now, this is starting to sound like Star Wars, which, you know, Star Wars is sort of an encouraging movie, the good versus the evil. Israel will continue to uproot the terror infrastructure. Operation Defensive Shield. Now, what did we have in the Gulf War? We had Operation Desert Shield. And in one night, it turned to Operation Desert Storm. That was excellent. That was excellent. And, you know, when Saddam said it would be the mother of all battles, it turned out to be the mother of all retreats. When you had Iraqi soldiers who were surrendering to everything. They were surrendering to Apache helicopters that were 400 yards up in the air. They were surrendering to helicopters flying over. There was an Associated Press photographer on the front line, and Iraqi soldiers surrendered to him. He said they didn't want to be shot. They didn't want their pictures in the paper. They surrendered to the AP photographer. He said, I can't take you as captives. And they're like, we surrender, we surrender. He said, all I have is a camera. We don't care, we surrender. It was the mother of all surrenders. And the Iraqi army, the Republican Guard, they didn't want to defend Saddam Hussein. They were all into surrendering. And we could have liberated the Iraqi people the way we've liberated the Afghan people if we had a wise leader in the White House. But we had a tragedy in the White House. And now Saddam, by most accounts, Saddam is feverishly developing a nuclear weapon. Feverishly. And he's got to think that his time is short. And if he could blow up a nuclear weapon in Tel Aviv or in the New York harbor that comes in on a ship, you think he wouldn't do it? Now, if he could get a nuke somewhere in the belly of a ship in New York harbor and we attack and he pushes the button, he would do it. Of course he would do it. He lives to do that. He lives for it. And we were, because of our lack of wisdom and foresight, we were cruel to the Iraqi people by not liberating them. We were cruel. And any media person or politician, like who's that guy on CNBC, Hardball? Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews. I've been on his show, but I'd like to get on there and debate Israel with him. He's starting to change his tune because the evidence that Arafat is a terrorist is so overwhelming. Maybe he went to that website, that Denver Bible Church website. What's the name of that website? DenverBibleChurch.org. No, the one that they sponsored. ArafatHarborsTerrorist.com. ArafatHarborsTerrorist.com, a Denver Bible Church website. Maybe Chris Matthews of CNBC went to our website and saw it's overwhelming that Arafat is a terrorist. But, about going into Iraq, Chris Matthews is against that. And I want to say, Chris, why do you hate the Iraqi people? What do you have against them that you want them to continue to be enslaved by this madman, this terrorist, murderous freak of a man? What do you hate, Iraqi people? Okay, Iraqi women don't have the same number of teeth per mouth as women that you date. But do you hate them? Because what, they have a different lifestyle, a different standard of living? You don't care that the whole nation is enslaved to a madman? Didn't you care about the Afghan people whose lives were misery under the Taliban? And Iraq's not much different. It's different in ways, but not in substance. And we would go in and liberate Iraq the way we liberated Germany from the Nazis and we liberated Japan from the emperor. We'd liberate them the way we liberated Italy from Mussolini. We could liberate the Iraqi people. And the Iraqi army, remember we were told even by our own liberals that Iraq is the fourth largest army in the world. It's going to be another Vietnam, another Korea. We're going to get in it. We're going to be slaughtered. We're not going to be able to win. And we don't even have to declare war on Iraq. We could just declare war games. We could just declare war games. We could say this is a military exercise with live fire. I mean, our military guys, they need to stay honed. So this is a military exercise with live fire. Oh, yeah, and the B team is going to be firing back. Live fire and live targets. And moving targets, live moving targets. And just to stay in practice, we're going to go have military exercises over the no-fly zone and then gradually move in to Baghdad. Target Saddam. And so we can liberate the Iraqi people. Now, is it our job to liberate every oppressed people around the world? No, that's not our responsibility. But as a neighbor, if your neighbor is killing his children, you can work to protect those children. If you have the ability, you can do it. If it's someone halfway around the world and they're killing their children, you don't have an obligation to go halfway around the world, but you can do it if you want to do it. If you have the ability and the desire to do it, you have the right to do it. Because a neighbor has the right to intervene if someone next door is trying to kill their children. Now look at China. China oppresses over 1 billion people. They've outlawed brothers and sisters. It's against the law in China to have a brother or a sister. It's against the law. They force abortion on women. That's why Planned Parenthood gives them millions of dollars. Forced infanticide. We know from a dear friend, Xu Yanzhou, who's a Chinese refugee who Bill Clinton put in jail in California for 5 years. Her only crime was she fled for her baby's life when they were forcing her to have an abortion. She got on a ship and came to America. We put her in jail for 5 years until, thanks to Christians, got her out, friends of this show, and then she ended up marrying one of our good friends from this show, Rich Holst. So, China, why not liberate China? Well, it's more difficult. It's a bigger country with more people, and they could absorb a lot more punches than Saddam could absorb. And they've got at least a few nukes. What do we have? Thousands? What does China have? Six? But still, six can do a lot of damage. Taiwan or Tokyo or San Diego, which they've said they've targeted. So we're out of time. But, hey, caller, you want to be live on the air the last 10 seconds?
Hey, this is Michael in Decatur. How are you?
Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Just wanted to check, see if Bob had heard that we're about to have an execution in Alabama.
You are? Who's being executed?
Hey, some lady that the first woman executed since 1957.
She's a convicted murderer, obviously. Praise the Lord for the obedience there. This is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.